Welcome back to the Compass Podcast. Today on the show, we're talking all things mining containers with Jesse Davern of RK Mission Critical. Mission Critical is one of the premier container builders within the space. We talk about the engineering behind these containers, how RK Mission Critical came to be, and what a typical deployment looks like. Before we get to the show, quick shout out to our new sponsor, Foundry Digital. The future of digital asset mining calls for top technical talent. As a premier training and education program for professional mining technicians, Foundry Academy answers. From hands-on ASIC labs taught by industry veteran instructors to coursework covering Bitcoin's global impact, Foundry Academy graduates acquire the skills facilities need to be off and mining. They've even built OSHA 10 certification into the curriculum. Open to all who hold a high school degree or equivalent, the next one-week course taking place in Rochester, New York, runs September 12th through the 17th. Visit foundryacademy.com to register or reach out to academy@foundrydigital.com. Jesse, welcome to the Compass Podcast. I'm bummed we're both in Denver, like right across the city from each other, but we're not able to do it in person today for the recording. Maybe next time, but again, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, appreciate you having me. And look forward to do it in person for the next one.
Oh yeah, we'll definitely do it. I'm currently slowly working on the media studio for Compass here in Denver. It's right across from the ballpark. It's going to be really nice. We have like a lot of the podcasting equipment and all that, but it's in the wrong location, not set up yet. So we'll get to it at some point. But at the same time, we wanted to make sure we have this podcast recorded because to my knowledge, there's actually not very much media about containerized solutions for Bitcoin mining. And Bitcoin mining is already a small topic. And then within that, like container solutions is just even smaller. But it's very important. If you're talking to any operator out there, any large Bitcoin mining firm, even like the smaller guys, they're all looking towards containerized solutions. And there's a disparity between the quality of these solutions and the ability to get them given supply chain problems over the last 2 years. And RK, just as a Compass provider, like we work with you guys on a lot of our solutions and for hosting. But then also you guys in general are some of the best out there, if not the best. So it's great to get your guys' expertise on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate the tire pump there too.
Yeah, for sure. That's what we do in the podcast, right? We show a little bit. We'll start off though talking about RK itself. My understanding is you guys have a larger parent company, and then Mission Critical is the firm working on these containerized solutions. But you guys don't only just do Bitcoin mining. You guys operate in basically the larger industry of containerized solutions for any product, whether you're trying to grow marijuana or maybe you want to have like some sort of refrigeration solution behind your grocery store or something like that. There's tons of different ways you can use these containers for making movable real estate. Bitcoin mining is just one of those. So I'll leave it to you.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm Jesse Davern with RK Mission Critical. So Mission Critical, we're a modular manufacturer and you hit on it exactly, Will. We manufacture a ton of products across a variety of different market verticals. We started this business in 2015 with the idea of doing modular data centers for traditional IT settings. Okay, so hyperscale data centers, enterprise, colo. And that's largely what the business was in the beginning. Okay, so still a complete modular form factor. It's just more traditional IT racks, high redundancy, precision mechanical cooling, high reliability, okay, sophisticated controls. The progression of the business was really identifying high growth markets and finding an opportunity to create a product to support a high growth market versus a lot of our competitors at the time were just trying to chase individual projects, as someone might add. So we kind of shifted our mindset of saying, all right, we don't necessarily want to chase projects. We want to design a product that can support hundreds of different projects. Okay, so Bitcoin mining, for example, and we'll dive into that in a second. And kind of a unique characteristic about our business is we're really engineering focused. Okay, so we're a very good blend of construction, manufacturing, and engineering, which there's not a ton of businesses right now that have those three pillars underneath them at scale. So, you know, some people are very good at construction or manufacturing, but they don't bring this engineering leg into the equation. So really the reason we got into the cryptocurrency mining space is we saw an opportunity in an industry that at the time, you know, was not very mature at all in 2018. And we didn't feel like there was a true engineered solution for a containerized mining unit on the market. Sure, there's other people building them, very small scale. And we saw some very scary containers in the beginning in 2018, right? We're packing 2 megawatts of electrical distribution into a metal box. So we took the mindset of engineering first to develop a product versus the market trend of just building kind of ad hoc on the spot without a true engineering plan. So the other thing that is in supply chain is a huge component I'm sure we'll talk about, but you know, we feel somewhat isolated from a lot of supply chain constraints just based off our parent company, RK Industries. So that, you know, it's a large holding company that owns 7 very diverse businesses. So we're able to work with our sister partners across structural steel, electrical, service, mechanical, and to really bring all these different business units underneath one umbrella with RK Mission Critical so we can truly provide turnkey plug and play solutions.
That makes more sense now. Just going to your warehouse a year ago and then hearing about it from other Compass employees who've been to the facility, you guys are just cranking these things out really quickly. And I've just heard so many different people, and I've been to a few other facilities for building these things, and it's slow right now because it's hard to get any parts, let alone like these big shipping containers. What are some other containerized solutions you guys build, or what are some examples of some of the other container solutions that you most often roll out on your production line compared to like your Bitcoin mining ones?
Yeah, so we have an established product line for agricultural farming, right? That sounds very different than Bitcoin mining. We work with a great company called Farmbox. And it's basically, we have 2 separate products for them. One is a vertical hydroponic farm. So we manufacture this in a 40-foot container, and we send these all around the country, Jamaica, Tahiti, Canada. And it's designed to grow any type of leafy green, right? So lettuce, kale, basil, they're even playing around with trees, like a small kind of tree seedlings. And we have another product for them called the Gourmet Mushroom Farm, which is, you know, literally to farm from starting with just raw substrate into growing gourmet mushrooms, whether it's lion's mane, chaga, reishi, kind of exotic mushrooms that can be hard to find in a lot of locations. So it's funny, right? Very different industry, but one kind of common theme between all the products that we manufacture is intense mechanical, electrical, and control systems. And for us being a manufacturer, right, we kind of look at opportunities and products through a different lens. We bring a ton of value to our clients on how to help them scale their business. Okay, so we have very high throughput through our 280,000 square feet of manufacturing facility. You know, just on the mining side alone, you know, we're doing upwards of 70 containers a month, and you know, each one's 2 megawatts. When you can think about that from a megawatt standpoint, it's very high volume. So we've got the farming units, CBD extraction, which I think you may have seen some of those units when you walked through the first tour, which same thing, right? Very intense mechanical ventilation, life safety systems go into CBD extraction plants. And then we still have a very large footprint in the traditional data center market. So still building modular data centers with UPS, battery backup, high reliability and and very sophisticated mechanical electrical distribution. So like I said, across a ton of different market verticals, but all very common things and all very scalable products.
Totally. Let's dive into the Bitcoin mining boxes themselves. So correct me if I'm wrong, but 2 megawatts is typically the size that you guys make for all your modular containerized solutions for Bitcoin mining. It's a mouthful. And then you guys can fit between 400 and 500 ASICs in there. We're talking like S19s or what's miners, probably depends on what sort of order the miner comes up with. What are some other data points we can have about these containers? And I'd be also curious to know if you have any specs on any rival firms' container solutions, or like maybe like the generic Acme version of what's out there, how it compares to what you guys build.
Yeah, great question. So our core product, the Disruptor 2000, it's a 2 megawatt container, and we can fit 560 miners in there. We've made the design so that if you're running S19s or micro BT units, it doesn't really matter. We have to know ahead of time just so we can make sure we dial in our hot aisle containment. But 560 machines, new age miners fit in each box, which is a substantial amount going into a 40-foot container. But we see a lot of our large volume customers really like that density from a standpoint that when they're building out a 50 to 100 megawatt site, we're cutting in half the amount of pads they have to pour, the amount of feeders they're running from their transformers, right? So getting into this dense footprint with less containers is creating an environment where it's easier for them to deploy on site at scale. So we've really honed in our design since we started building these in 2018, right? And I think if you talk to a lot of our customers, we're really known for working with the operators on site to make continuously making enhancements to our core product based off of the operator's input, right? There's only so many things we can do on the engineering side, but at the end of the day, we want to talk to the people inside these containers running these on a day-to-day basis, right? That the smallest thing may save them, 50% of their time when they're loading 560 miners into each container. So I think a big thing on the market right now is when you look at these mining containers, there's still a lot of product coming over from China. And these containers don't have enough ventilation through them is really what we're seeing, right? We're still getting a lot of customers who come back to us after they may have purchased units from another firm with the issue of airflow and temperatures inside their container. We go out to site, we try to help them maybe figure out in the short term how we can retrofit some of their containers to keep their uptime a little bit higher. But we really invested heavily in the beginning of the development of this product doing CFD analysis. Okay, so modeling temperatures, air flows, air turbulence through these containers. And the smallest little degree of pitch in like the rack design very dramatically affects the airflow in these containers, right? So we went through a very extensive process of CFD modeling. And then over the past 3 years, right, we've been able to compare these CFD models to real world data from our customers. Okay, because a CFD is very good, but it's not going to give you it's not bulletproof, right? So it's a very fine mixture of engineering and real world data. So to give you an example, right, there's a handful of containers out there that maybe don't use any supplemental exhaust systems. There's some companies out there using maybe 1.5 horsepower fans, which in certain climates, that I'm not saying it's a bad design. In certain climates, that does work, right? But now that we're seeing these places in the U.S. become kind of the hot spot for miners to go to, right? West Texas, Oklahoma. We're seeing that a lot of these other solutions out there are just very undersized for the performance that they're needing to ride through these summer months. So we've, you know, for example, we use 5-horsepower fans, manufactured in the US, direct drive, very high failure rate for the companies out there using belt drive fans. And it's just a maintenance nightmare for them on site after time. So we've tried to look at the holistic approach of, you know, once we send these containers to site, we don't want our customers calling us in 6 months saying that something's already failed on them, right? We're bringing maturity and true technical experience into the space with our data center background of thinking about uptime and reliability.
Yeah, just to jump in there a little bit, the one thing that was striking to me when I went to your plant, your manufacturing site, was just the engineering behind everything. And for most people who are jumping into Bitcoin mining, they're thinking about Bitcoin mining in a very similar way that they think about minting an NFT or going on Coinbase and buying Bitcoin. They think that it just exists, right? I can mine Bitcoin. I need a computer. Maybe just need to find a weird way to plug it in. That's about it. But the reality of it is it's an industry. It has industrial scales to it, and you need actual parts, labor, and efficiencies, including like this engineering structure, to be able to mine Bitcoin profitably and well through both a bull market and a bear market. So it's really cool to see in person your guys' engineering team and the designs that you guys put into these things. I'd be curious to know, just to lob a question back to you. You started in 2015, but here we are in 2022, and you guys have these engineering specs that you've built up over that time. It doesn't seem like a lot of time, right? 7 years. But you guys have been doing that with a few different industries, whether it be data centers, hydroponics, other random containerized solutions, and now Bitcoin mining. What are some foundational principles you guys draw on to enable you guys to move to market so quickly with these designs?
Yeah, our process is pretty unique for how we bring a product to market. Okay, so there's always talk in the beginning that someone wants 100 of something. And I love selling 100 of anything, but we always start and say, all right, timeout. Let's start with one, right? So really our process is from the engineering side of understanding an issue that a client has. And then we go into building what we call a first of a kind, right? We call it a FOAK. We have a extensive engineering team who can turn around concepts very quickly to get to our production floor from a product development standpoint. So we go through and we build this first of a kind unit, okay? And we only build one. And it's not really even in a manufacturing line at that point. It could just be kind of built in a separate area within our facility. Okay, so we build that first unit. We deploy it. We test it with an individual customer. And then what we do is called a Kaizen event. Okay, so it's a Lean Six Sigma philosophy where we gather our engineering team, the customer, the customer's operators, and then we typically try to bring in a third party consultant unrelated to the project. And we spend 2 days going through the entire process from start to finish, the design, the engineering, deployment, functionality on site, all these different kind of bullet points that we hit in this Kaizen. And the idea is that you break every single thing down to these kind of bite-sized chunks. And the whole idea is to gain efficiency, right? We want to get the price out of it. We want to get the lead time out of it while keeping the quality up. So after we finish this first of a kind, there's always a long laundry list of things coming out of our Kaizen event for enhancements we want to make into a product. So then we build our second of a kind, and it's a similar process as the first of a kind, right? We build one additional one with all these new enhancements from the first of a kind, deploy it, all right? Maybe there's a few minor tweaks from there, and then we're off to the races in production. But a big thing that a lot of these that's needed in the market to support these large-scale miners that a lot of the smaller kind of mid-tier manufacturers don't understand. Maybe they understand, they have a hard time executing on is the supply chain process. So as much as we are a manufacturer, sometimes I feel like we're a logistics supply chain company. when you think about how many individual components go into each one of these containers, and building at scale introduces new challenges, right? It's easy to go buy one of everything, but when you turn around and have to go put 500,000 20 amp breakers on order, it can be very hard to source, right? So you have to have very sophisticated supply chain processes to execute at scale.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of people, a lot of capital, a lot of timing, a lot of patience, probably.
Yeah.
Seems like that whole process from proof of concept all the way to deployment is probably years. I'd be curious, for Bitcoin mining, when was the first time you guys got a request to build a proof of concept, and how long did it take you guys to get to your current model?
Yeah, so the first inquiry we had was December of 2018. At the time, I didn't know what Bitcoin was. I've got coming with my data center hat on, saying, "How are you fitting 2 megawatts in a box like that?" So it was a new territory for us, for sure.
Totally.
It took us 12 weeks to design and build that first unit. That unit looks very different than what it does today, so it's been an evolution since then. But the initial product development time took us 12 weeks to develop and build the first unit.
Sort of riffing on the same topic, but turning a little bit towards the engineering of the box itself and the parts you guys use. The 2 megawatts inside a container like that, and that's ridiculous, right? Like, you should come to the table and be like, how are you stuffing 2 megawatts of power into this little box? I'd be curious if you have any like comparisons on hand for how much energy that is, just for listeners. And then I'd also like to know a little bit more about the other parts that go inside the box itself. You mentioned the type of fan you guys use. Be curious to know about like the PSUs and different things that go inside the box to make this operational. Like, do you guys only source from US companies because you find the quality to be better, or do you guys source outside because it's cheaper and more efficient? Curious to get all those details.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I'm given tours of our units, when I'm trying to relate 2 megs of power to someone, I typically walk them through the unit, and we have 14 400 amp distribution panels inside of our unit that are, you know, during normal operation are fully taxed. Your house probably has one panel that's probably 150 amps that's completely underutilized, right? So when you think about it from that standpoint of what it takes to operate your house at 150 amps panel that's underutilized, and we've got 14 400 amp panels fully maxed all the time in each container. It's a lot of power. It is a lot of power.
Yeah. It's a ton of power.
So going into kind of the other things, right? One thing that's unique about RK Mission Critical, right, is we are very vertically integrated within our parent company. So we make a lot of our own raw components. Okay, from the racking that we use, we process all that from just bare metal. The structural steel for the container modifications, we fabricate 100% of that in-house and buy metal directly from the mills, right? So large-scale production on the structural steel side. We ended up designing and manufacture our own power distribution panel. So unlike a lot of companies out there, we don't use your traditional PDU, right? Like rack mounted PDU with all your outlets on there. We couldn't find a PDU manufacturer that could scale their production quickly enough to meet our supply chain demand. So our engineering team went out and designed our own custom power panels, where we source all of our raw material, right? Breakers, fuses, bus bars, and basically, build our own custom power distribution panels. We try to take as much of the supply chain items and bring them in house so that we control our own destiny. Okay. There's a few components that obviously we have to purchase: network switches, the fans. Like I said, we purchase those domestically, from very reputable fan manufacturer. The only component that we're currently sourcing out of China are some power cords. So, and that this all kind of was a transition for our business during COVID, right? We had to continue to deliver product to our customers, obviously throughout COVID. Very hard to get components during COVID out of Asia. So we increased our supply chain efforts to source as much stuff domestically as we can, just from a standpoint of not having to worry about stuff being stuck off of the port in LA, which I'm sure we've all felt some pain on. So, you know, from that, we have a very sophisticated supply chain and inventory process where really to hit the lead times that we need, we've got cycle counts on everything that we use, and we're always bringing in fresh inventory for near-term stuff. But we have very strategic supply chain partners within our vendor community that are helping stock certain critical components at their facilities, so that we can react very quickly to new customer orders.
Awesome. Appreciate that info. Sort of going from like the beginning to the whole deployment process, so might as well keep on track. What does it look like rolling out one of these container solutions from the Denver warehouse and into the field? And how do you guys work with the team to get that done? You mentioned like the landing pad that needs to be constructed. I actually saw one of those being constructed at a Nebraska facility. Seems pretty basic and standard, so maybe there's not a lot of details or nuance there, but I'd be curious to know about like the whole process of working with a mining operations team, getting one of these deployed, how long it takes to have that deployment done, how long it takes to have the container stabilized, hooking it up to the grid. What are some possible failures that occur when you deploy these, and what sort of solutions have you guys found for those failures? Curious to know about the whole deployment process.
Yeah, so kind of the whole process, right, even from the beginning of the sales side, is one prerequisite for someone to purchase a container from us is they have to come visit our facility, right? From the standpoint that we want people to get inside these containers, touch the containers, see what they're purchasing. We can go through the whole scope, right? So that we're really trying to avoid the issues on site of we didn't know what was provided and what we should have provided, right? We can bring you into our facility, go through full containers so that the purchaser who hopefully is bringing their operator can really see how these are set up, right? Once we implemented that requirement, it really helped on the coordination on the back end, right? So from there, one of the requirements that we need to know up front, obviously, is the type of machines that the client's going to be running, just so that we can make sure we've got the proper containment inside for airflow, right? Just the form factor of the micro BT is so different than bit main units. So from there, right, customer places an order. Once that order is up in the queue, it takes us 8 days. Okay, so it takes us 8 days to build each unit, which is very quick, right? And we can thank Henry Ford for that, right? We're really using the assembly line process, right? Which is very, very effective on a product, right? So we've got standard work, all the materials there each morning for the employees, very little waste in it within an assembly line mentality. Okay, so that module gets built in 8 days, deployed out to the customer site. So we've got a very thorough engineering document for site startup. The first unit that a customer buys, we're going to send our technical team on site to be there with the customer during startup. Okay, this goes back to 2 megawatts. We want to make sure that the customer is doing pre-energization startups. Depending on the location, these containers may travel, 1,000 miles across country to their site. We always want to err on the side of caution and safety with dealing with this much power. So we're going to pull, power panel covers off, check our torque marks, make sure nothing rattled loose during shipment. And it's very important that we do that on the first unit to train their on-site team how to receive and inspect new containers coming online. We've we've seen a lot of customers get away from doing concrete pads for these units and just putting in helical piers or some type of caisson type pier, really from the standpoint that at scale, you can save, you know, large volumes of concrete by doing these, right? So we have very detailed engineered drawings saying, hey, when you receive our unit, you need to have, you know, footings placed at these locations to support the unit, right? And speed up this on-site time. The other thing is, you know, based off of 2 megawatts on how much airflow we have coming into this container, we do have large external intake hoods. So we want to train the on-site team on how to efficiently and properly install these intake hoods, just so that, you know, it minimizes anything, any issues once they start the container for their airflow. There's been one item of coordination, right, that we haven't figured out now, but in the beginning, right, something we learned very early on was, you know, is the customer bringing in underground feeders from their transformer, or are they going to run, you know, some type of busing system above ground, right? So these are all things that we've kind of vetted out through our process of, you know, in our checklist to go through with new clients to understand how they're going to set up their site, so that when they receive our container, it truly is plug and play. You kind of asked about issues, right? Every company is going to have issues at some point in the manufacturing process. Sure, we have to, but it's all about how you respond. I think if you ask our customers, we're very responsive. If there is a warranty or quality issue, right? The issues typically come down more of if we're having to integrate a new component from a supply chain standpoint, that something we overlooked or didn't catch during the build. So we're very responsive in that standpoint to get customers going. One thing I can think of, right, is some of the fuses we had at one point where all the fuses happened to be rattling loose during transportation, right? So identify that with a new product. Goes all the way through a QA/QC process of a root cause analysis up to engineering. They very quickly have to create a solution, how to, you know, fix what the client received, plus everything on our shop floor. So it's a very collaborative effort with, you know, our Lean Six Sigma 5S kind of processes to capture any QC issues, rectify them with the customer, corrective action report, close the item out to make sure it doesn't happen again.
For energization, I'm wondering about that process specifically. That's something at Compass, when we're doing deployments, we always try to give a wider estimate for energization, because there's a lot of things going into hooking up a local power grid and then bringing on all these containers that demand so much energy, right? 2 megawatts is nothing to sniff at. So yep. I'd be curious to get your knowledge about that as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, and this is kind of one beauty of containers, right? Is typically what we see is, you know, these customers have large sites, let's say 100 megawatt site. They're not lighting 100 megawatts up on day one, right? It's the beauty of doing containers that we can get their mining infrastructure online in these kind of more bite-sized and manageable chunks in 2 megawatts. So I'd say a typical customer is going to, you know, on a volume project, they want to receive somewhere between 10 to 20 containers a month. Okay, so, you know, 20 to 40 megawatts. And we're seeing, depending on how they're set up with and staffed on site, that they're successfully able to, you know, light up, you know, 5 to 6 containers a week, which is a lot, right? There's a lot of infrastructure behind the scenes that has to be done before our containers arrive. And just from the pure volume of miners, that is, of unboxing,
yeah,
loading.
It's like 2,500 miners, you know, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of trash to even like clean up, right? Like all these boxes, it's a lot. So it just depends on how ready the customer is on their site. Sometimes we get there and they've got an army of 10 people saying, hey, let's get going. Sometimes we get there and they say, oh man, we didn't realize there's going to be this this much infrastructure work to do.
That makes sense. Going right along, I'm curious knowing about the partners you guys work with the most, or large orders that you guys have deployed already in the field?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, this year alone, up to date, or what, in July, we've deployed right around 800 megawatts, just from January to right now. So, you know, we're partnering and working with the large guys in the space, Compute North. You know, they've got some very large sites, US Bitcoin Corp. They've got some nice sites, that they just finished and coming online very soon. And, you know, Compass, right? We deployed 10 megawatts to you guys, last month. So, you know, we're definitely working with our core business group is definitely the larger kind of, infrastructure, industrial size miners. But that's not to say we don't sell one-off containers to smaller people, right? There's, you know, space station mining, right? They're a great group of guys, very smart. They've got a great market strategy, and, you know, we're working with them on much smaller deployments, but doesn't really matter for us, right? We've got a product that rolls off of our production line. So whether someone wants one container or, you know, 300 containers, I love working with kind of all different sizes in the market.
Totally. And while we're staying on the topic of who you guys have partnered with in the past and stuff like that, I'd be curious to know, what is your guys' sort of outlook for the next 6 months to 12 months? And feel free to get as general or specific as you can with that.
Sure.
But I'd be curious to know, just given Bitcoin's price is down, things are slowing, we can look at network hash rate, difficulty of Bitcoin mining. It's definitely slowed down around 215 exahash for the total network. People were predicting 300 exahash by the end of the year. I think we could get close to that if we see a lot of these deployments go online, but mm-hmm. I've heard of a lot of firms start slowing down production, and it makes sense, right? You're earning less Bitcoin per day, so there's going to be a slowdown in terms of deploying new units.
Yeah, it's funny. We've seen some customers slow down. That's just a fact. At the same time, though, we have some customers who are like doubling down right now. They're seeing the price of machines so enticing right now that they're pushing to place orders to get new machines, to get stuff built, while they can put, you know, if they're well capitalized, right? If they feel like they can put their capital to work right now to go further than maybe where that capital is going to go, you know, 8 months from now, hopefully when the price of Bitcoin goes back up. I think one other big thing, right, is we're seeing a little bit of a slowdown in Texas as far as people actually being able to execute on their power deals to get sites up and running. There's a lot of machines that are in boxes right now that people want to get deployed that they don't have the sites and power deals done. So I'd say that's probably almost more of a hurdle that we're seeing with some of our customers is getting power versus the price of Bitcoin, right? The I'm sure like Compass and the big guys we're dealing with, they're so long-term on Bitcoin. Yeah, granted, everyone's going to tighten up the purse strings a little bit right now, but we don't see people, you know, completely cutting off the funnels. We're seeing a slowdown, re-strategize, but definitely the companies that have working capital right now, I think are going to rise to the top very quickly.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's similar to some other conversations I've had with Bitcoin miners out there and just operators in the space. Texas had a lot of mining go to it. A lot of people were getting these energy deals ready. They didn't get them quite across the finish line, or ERCOT pumped the brakes on the whole situation. And now they're sort of just sitting, waiting. They might even have some of the infrastructure done, but they're going to have to hold tight. Hopefully they're able to do that. But it's not super shocking when you look at how many gigawatts, literally gigawatts of power people were trying to push into Texas at the same time. And then even just this week, right, we had curtailment in Texas. All these miners had to shut down at the same time. It's awesome they can do that. But at the same time, I would say from ERCOT's perspective, it might be time just to calm down in deploying Bitcoin miners. A lot of people might not like that, but I think it's probably the appropriate thing to do. Moving on, as we kind of close the conversation here, I'm curious about next products you guys are working on. Since you guys are in the forefront of engineering for Bitcoin mining, I know there's a few things up your guys' sleeve, one with an immersion build out with a joint venture with another firm. And then there's one other one that you wanted to talk about on the podcast today as well.
Yeah. So let's stick on air cooled first, and then we'll jump to immersion. So, depending on when this comes out, we're launching a Texas edition mining container. Okay. So we've spent the last, couple months during these hot times in Texas, working hand in hand with, our big operators down there for understanding some of the issues that they're facing in West Texas, from heat, dust, crazy windstorms. Okay. So there's some things down there that are uniquely, different to, I'm going to say the Texas environment. So we have a team of engineers working on this with the operators, coming up with, a handful of what I'm going to say enhancements to our core product, to really battle the Texas environment. So we're getting ready to launch that product when it'll be available starting in September. We're taking orders on it now, and deployments will start happening in September. And really, it's an engineering problem. Okay? It's it's just like any kind of large deployment of infrastructure. Temperatures, wind, it's all manageable. It's just an engineering problem, right? So we've come up with some very unique solutions on how to have a solution that the miners can ride through these high temps, 105, 110 degrees, without having to drop down to, 70, 80% of their hash rate. So look for that product coming out here very soon. Okay, switching gears. So yeah, you also asked about kind of our 6 to 8 month outlook. We do see a huge trend of customers wanting to go towards immersion. And there's a handful of reasons. We feel like there's always going to be a market for air-cooled containers in certain geographic locations. Air-cooled works perfect. But as we transition in part of our production into immersion, we have partnered with Skate Ventures, who a lot of longtime miners know that name, very early into the space, specifically around immersion. Okay, so they've been doing immersion for about 4 years right now, right? So it's one of the first people in the space doing that. We're basically scaling their technology. Okay. So what I tell people is that, with our solution, you're getting the manufacturing prowess of RK Mission Critical and the engineering combined with real world data and operator experience in immersion over the past 4 years. Okay. So the big differentiator between our product and other things on the market is that we're not using a traditional bathtub approach that 99% of all other immersion products are utilizing. We feel like there's inherent issues with that kind of design of having hot spots in the tank. You can't mix and match miners and tanks very easy. And as new form factors come online, those tanks kind of become obsolete, right? Because they're so custom designed for a certain type of miner, where what we're doing is, we have individual tubs for each individual miner with individual flow control to each individual miner. So we're less worried about fluid temp and we care about the chip temp, right? So we can individually control the chip temperature of every miner on our system versus kind of looking at a tub as a complete aggregate, right? So and it's still modular. We're still sticking at this 2 megawatt density. And talking about supply chain, right? There's different components in an immersion system than air system. So we've partnered with some large OEM companies to custom design and manufacture specific immersion components, PDUs, for example, right? We are going to use PDUs versus our custom power panels in our immersion system, from the standpoint that we didn't feel like there was truly a PDU on the market that meets code. Once you start overclocking to this, you know, 6,500 watts, 7,000 watts that we're able to do in our system. So from that mindset, right, we've custom designed, engineered, partnered with some companies to basically bring multiple new products to the space that are all going to be kind of encompassed underneath our entire offering.
Yeah, there's a whole other conversation we could have about like staying up to code on a lot of these mining operations. I know Neil Galloway, I'll give him a little shout out, on our mining operations team is always talking about that, how there's a lot of providers out there or legacy products that are not up to code. And nowadays, since Bitcoin mining is such in the, it's in headlines, it's in the regulatory scope, you're going to see more regulators coming out and asking about that coding. Jesse, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the Compass podcast today. Again, we'll have to do this in person soon again, but this was a lot of information. I think people are really going to enjoy this podcast because there's nothing quite like it out there. So again, thank you for your time.
Yeah, appreciate it. Good chat with you.